ladies and gentlemen, honored by their country, decorated by their queen, and loved here in America, here are the Beatles.
Hello again and welcome to I've Got a Beatles podcast with Dave and Chris, and I want to personally thank Ed Sullivan for that great warm introduction for our show today. So,
yeah, Ed Sullivan became a real Beatles groupie, right?
He was, I know, yeah. That, of course, was his introduction to the very, very famous show that is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year, the Shea Stadium performance, and it's going to be a part of our discussion today when we look at the Beatles live in 65, and specifically their American tour.
Short amount of time and a lot of stuff happened.
Yeah, no kidding.
August 15th was this Shea Stadium show. The 31st was the end of the tour.
Yeah. Wow.
August. So, and a lot of stuff. They didn't just relax on their off days.
Either, no.
So. No. And a lot of these shows, two shows a day.
Yeah.
Like they do an afternoon and then a nighttime show.
It's pretty amazing how Brian Epstein ran those guys practically every moment. They had to either be writing songs, recording, or being on tour. So there was, yeah, like you say, almost no break. And so they did earn a well-deserved break right after the show ended. And so they were off for several weeks. So.
Yeah, they were off for 6 weeks right after this,
yeah.
And right after that, they started recording Rubber Soul. So I kind of consider this tour the kind of end of the early period.
Yeah, that's a really good point, especially when we talk about the set list, because a lot of the songs, it's kind of a mix of some more recent tunes and singles, but there's still some of the really old 64, not old, but the previously done songs, the earlier songs.
Your Hard Day's Night, your very, very short version of Twist That Shout.
Exactly. We haven't really talked much about the Beatles live, and that's maybe because so many of the recordings are not so good because you can't hear anything. It was more because of all the screaming. It was more of the spectacle. So, I mean, how do you describe, set the stage here for one of these shows? What's it going to be like, and who's going to be there, and how long are we going to be there, and what's a Beatles show like in 1965?
Well, these days, say you go to a Paul McCartney show, right? There's no opening act. You're
right.
Sitting there for an hour getting sort of like ready for it, and then it's like song after song. Great performance.
No breaks. Yeah.
No breaks. This thing was I don't even know what, and like a bunch of opening acts coming out playing a few songs apiece, including dance troupe.
There's some great names of these opening acts. Yeah, I'll read one and let's alternate here. There's Brenda Holloway. This was in order of appearance. Brenda Holloway and the King Curtis Band.
You've got your Cannibal and the Headhunters. You're a big Cannibal and the Headhunters fan.
I've got all their original LPs. Yes. Then we've got Sounds Incorporated, the wonderful instrumental band.
Yeah, on at least a few of the stops, the Young Rascals played. Now I've actually heard of the Young Rascals.
Yes. Yeah, they actually had some hits. Yeah.
Yeah,
and then we also had, as you mentioned, the Discotheque Dancers preceding and prancing to music with the King Curtis Band.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I like to see go-go dancers.
Yeah, oh, that would be interesting.
Big fan of go-go dancing.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I think when we talked about the Ed Sullivan show, we talked about how those other acts that perform with the Beatles are kind of, you know, pale in comparison to them. But they could always say they were on the same stage as the Beatles.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's their claim to fame.
Well, these opening acts would play for quite some time. And then the Beatles would come out, and their set's only like 35 minutes.
Yeah.
Tops.
Yeah.
So they didn't play that long on any of these shows. So, but to counteract that, the tickets were basically, I mean, this was 1965, but the tickets were pretty cheap in some of these places. Well, I'll tell you some of the, as we go along, some of the ticket prices.
Well, and it makes sense, too, that the sets would be short because the songs were short. You know, there were no jams or longer tunes. So, I mean, Please Please Me is like a little over a half hour, the whole album. So you're not going to play too much. And I think it was more just the spectacle of it, of just seeing them and just to, you know, see them in the flesh. So,
well, with one big exception, which we'll talk in detail about, the sound quality of these things was garbage too. I mean, how can you, the Shea Stadium, they put them through the, could you imagine being at a ballpark 50 years ago and the sound quality of their little speakers, you know, announcing, you know, today I feel like I'm the luckiest man. Well, the fans are there, but instead it's like a Beatles song.
Yeah, there's a great great little moment in the Beatles anthology when Paul is talking about this show, and he says basically that, you know, like they decided to put us through the speakers, the PA system, where they say, now coming up, batter up, first baseman, so-and-so. And it just, it was so tinny that you could hardly hear. So, yeah, the sound quality is not good, and we'll talk about the few shows of that tour that actually did have good sound quality. And fortunately, thanks to the wonders of YouTube, you can now listen to them, and it's pretty amazing.
Run us through a typical set list. Now, the last live thing we talked about was the Ed Sullivan show appearances.
Right.
And we were saying, wow, those were really, really didn't have too much John Lennon in them. It was like real, real Paul heavy. Well, these live shows was like opposite, pretty much.
I'd say it's, definitely more skewed towards John. The set list didn't change too much. There were just a couple of exceptions here and there, but for the most part, we had songs. Well, everything started with Twist and Shout, and then that went into She's a Woman, so you've got Paul, and then you've got I Feel Fine, which is John, and then what's next after that?
Dizzy Miss Lizzy, another John. Another John with some Ticket to Ride.
And then to bring in George.
Yeah. Oh, hey, everybody, this is our single.
With a little Everybody's Trying to Be My Baby. Which
song would, from my album.
Yeah, we'll talk about their in-between song banter here in a minute.
Yep.
But so George had his one song. And that was usually followed up by the Can't Buy Me Love. So, yep. Paul.
And then Babies in Black. That's sort of both of them from there.
Mm-hmm.
And then
everyone's favorite moment.
Paul would get up there and be like, okay, and now we're... It's Ringo! And people would lose their minds. And he'd usually play I Want to Be Your Man. On a couple of occasions, including Shay, he played Act Naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then the last tunes really were sometimes you'd hear A Hard Day's Night, Help, so the two film songs, with both sung by John for the most part, and then they'd conclude with I'm Down, so Paul screaming and going crazy at the end.
Plus on I'm Down, I bring out the keyboards there.
Yeah, which is...
Hook in the keyboards, which would, because of the lack of good mixing... would just sort of blast out everything else.
Yeah, I think that was that a Farfisa or some little organ? It's really tinny sounding. But that's pretty much the show. So you've got hits, like big hits in there, like I Feel Fine and Ticket to Ride, Hard Day's Night, Help. And then you've got some pretty good B-sides in there, like I'm Down and... Babies in Black, things like this, some sort of album tracks that are kind of interesting and show off different sides. So
it's a little more interesting than one would expect, actually.
I would agree. I think it's a pretty good set list for the most part. I'm not sure I like George just doing the cover of Everybody's Trying to Be My Baby, but I don't know what else he would have done, really. He did the Chuck Berry song, Roll Over Beethoven, in the earlier tours, and he hadn't really written that much worth performing on stage yet.
So the tour, as we said, it started out in New York with the big Shea Stadium. So let's hear a tune from Shea Stadium.
Yeah, it'll set this up. Of course, the video is really famous, and this is a hello of Apple if you're listening. A nice, clean, mixed, freshly remixed, everything redone, deluxe edition of Shea Stadium would be a great idea, and we would love it. But, I mean, especially the Shea Stadium. It's just beautifully done because it's in color, and then the cameraman really captured a lot of the scene and just the people fainting, the girls crying, and their boyfriends next to them just standing there shaking their heads. And
They had a whole lot of cameras there.
Yeah.
And Shea Stadium's really featured in the anthology, especially the long version. And they kind of make it out to be like, oh, they're really kind of like getting tired and losing their mind at this point.
Mm-hmm.
From a bunch of overwork. I don't know if having fun playing the keyboard is like translates to me as like losing one's mind.
No.
So I thought that was a little overblown in the anthology, but definitely worth another look at that chapter in the anthology if you want to spin that. Let's have a listen to one of the tunes being played, and then we'll talk a little bit more about it.
Sure.
Here's Can't Buy Me Love.
Thank you very much. Thank you, George. Great, eh? Hey, great, eh? Told you. This next song, this one, where if you all feel like clapping your hands, well, do so in this one. I've been saying this for about 3 days and nobody ever claps them, but don't worry. This one is one called Can't Buy Me Love. I can't buy me love. That makes you feel alright. I'll get you anything, my friend, if it makes you feel alright. Cause I don't care too much for money. A money can buy me love. I'll give you all I've got to give if you say you love me too.
So Can't Buy Me Love from the Shea Stadium concert, which up to that point was the world record for a pop concert in terms of attendance, which was about 55,000 fans. And gross revenue, which was about $304,000 of box office, which is a lot. They got about 160,000 of that. So
they really could have done a lot more. Because they set the stage out on second base.
I know.
And they didn't sell any field tickets. I'm sure it would have been bedlam.
Well,
had
chaos.
Had they done it, but. You know, they could have done it in a way that, I mean, now you see a concert, first thing, they'd never put anything at second base. It'd be all the way back towards center field. And then
like
the center field area would be, like when we saw
McCartney at Wrigley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there'd be tons of field tickets, but there's like none. So it's very strange.
Well, I think that, I think it'd be pretty chaotic. It was the cops already look pretty strung out in the video trying to protect them, but that chaos is part of the reason why you may have noticed that recording sounded pretty good and pretty clean. Well, problem is that actually was not necessarily the live performance from Shea, as the Beatles went into the studio a little bit later in January and did some quote-unquote audio sweetening to some of the tracks, either re-recording or doing voiceovers or redoing the bass parts and just kind of cleaning it up to get some of that crowd noise out. But still sounds pretty great, and I like the way it's mixed.
Well, Dave, I had a suspension of disbelief that you...
Did I just ruin your whole...
You just ruined it, yeah.
I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad tidings here. But,
I don't even know why we should go on. So from New York City, they had New York... Shea Stadium was such a big deal that they had a day off after because they kept that as a rain date. Because they would have had the show on the next day had it rained. because it was such a big concert. From there, they went to Toronto for one of these. Like, they're in Toronto, and they do two shows. Next day, they're in Atlanta.
Yeah. Who booked that? Who's the travel agent on that?
Like, can you imagine?
Back in 1965. Yeah.
It's brutal. Brutal. So.
Yeah, so they played the Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto for two 27-minute performances in an indoor stadium. So real brief. yep, and then, like you
said...
Well,
they'd had a day off before.
That's true.
So I mean...
They could do the two shows back-to-back, yeah. And so then, like you said, somehow they got from Toronto to Atlanta the next day for a show at the Atlanta Stadium. Which was the Fulton County Stadium, which was that used to be where the Braves played baseball until Turner Field.
Now, how much do you think field level seats cost?
So these would be the good ones.
The Beatles. These are the good seats.
I'd say $10.
$5.50.
Wow.
And the upper level ones, $4.50. Now this is like one of the very first things at Fulton County Stadium, too. Mm-hmm. Now, something really strange happened that day, kind of a historic thing, and we're the benefactors of it here because we have a good recording of the show, and the Beatles, you know, they usually couldn't hear themselves play, but this guy, F.B. Duke Mewbourne.
That's a great southern name.
Of an Atlanta hi-fi store called Baker Audio. And he put monitor speakers on the stage, something that had never been done before.
Mm-hmm.
So he pointed it towards the group, and they were like, oh my, we can hear this. Plus, the stadium, being a new stadium, had really great amplifiers and speakers. So they were getting a whopping 175 watts of sound.
Wow.
So, I mean, today it's like no big deal, but you can actually hear Paul on the recording here go like, it's loud, isn't it?
Yeah, a couple of times they keep talking. John says it too later. He says, oh, you can hear us or something. And they were just so impressed that they could hear themselves play. And so the quality is good, but also the playing is very good too. So we want to sample a song or two from that show. And since we heard some Paul, it's time for some John. So should we check out I Feel Fine from the Atlanta show?
All right, let's do it.
Baby's good to me, you know she's happy as can be, you know she said so. I'm in love with her and I feel fine.
Sounds good, really tight, and the guitars sound good, and Ringo has it's amazing how things improve when you can hear yourself.
Yeah, they were thrilled with it, and they actually offered that guy Mewbourne, they were like, hey, come on the road with us and set up the sound at the other places. He's like, no, I got a business to run, forget it.
Yeah, lost chances there. Oh, well.
Yeah. He could have taken 2 weeks off and done the rest of the tour.
Come on, dude. It's only another week or so. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we should probably, we haven't heard anything from the Quiet Beatle yet either, have we? So.
Oh, no. Yeah. Now, this is interesting. Yeah. That they played this tune. It's a strange, I mean, right now it'd be a real strange choice if, it'd be very strange if George was playing right now.
Especially strange from the great yeah. beyond here. Yeah.
That's right. So let's hear from the great back in time from the great beyond. Everybody's trying to be my baby.
Well, they took some honey from a tree, dressed it up and they called it. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby now. Woke up last night, 4:30, 50 women knocking on my door. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby now, yeah. Last night I did stay late, fall home had a 19 days. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby now.
They sound like they're having a lot of fun, don't they? I mean, George sounds really good and animated, and the guitars, just, yeah, everything's really clicking on that night.
Well, it's probably the first time in several years they've heard each other.
I know. Not screaming, the wall of screams. Yeah.
Well, you know, only playing one lousy show in Atlanta.
For a half hour.
It was like, come on, guys. Get your act together. Shipped them down to Houston for two shows. Down in Houston, they played an afternoon show and an evening show. Now, there are quality recordings of these as well, because they were FM broadcasts. The other thing about these shows is they did like a press conference before every mm-hmm. show. Like snarkily answer a bunch of questions and then, go on to play their show. Well, in Houston, they played those two shows. Let's hear something from Houston.
Yeah, we've covered John Paul and George. So, are you ready to introduce some Ringo here? Can you do your best Paul impression? The way he says it, or?
Oh, now we're gonna have it's a Ringo.
Well, now the next number is a bit special, sort of. It's a feature, you might call it. This one features somebody who doesn't sing often, drink much, etc., singing a song called "I Wanna Be Your Man, Ringo." Your love of ring. Your love of ring. I wanna be your man. No other ring. Like no other ring. Like no other ring. I wanna be your man. 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 Yes. And you love me, baby. Tell me that you love me. I wanna be your man. I wanna be your lover, baby. I wanna be your man.
I wanted to mention, in listening to Paul introduce it and you introduce it, when you go to a concert now, most musicians will talk between songs, or at least some of the songs. They'll, welcome everybody or say what they're playing next or tell stories. Paul always tells his canned stories about Jimi Hendrix. And Linda and George and all that stuff. But back then, I laugh at these in between banter on these songs, because it's just so phoned in, like so bad. All that they usually, everything it's usually, all right, thank you, We'd like to carry on with a song.
Another song?
from
a record?
LP.
An LP? It's a long player record?
Yeah.
one of these, like, particularly that when they play Hard Day's Night, they're like, from a first movie soundtrack, the black and white one. There it is.
Yeah. And it was just hilarious. The one funny thing, though, that John keeps doing, that if you've never watched or seen this on any of the videos, to check out some of the live performances, and you'll see Johnny's feet, or he stomps his feet and he claps his hands in kind of a weird way and like talks funny, like thing there, and it gets the crowd going. And
what was that? I missed that.
Yeah. I'll translate that in the description here. But John gets into it. He tries to have a little fun, and they always tell everybody to clap their hands and such. So
stomp their feet,
yeah, all that. So I don't know. Would you have been clapping your hands and stomping your feet back in the Houston show there?
I would have been screaming and crying.
Yeah, probably
all the girls.
Yeah.
Now imagine, just imagine, you're in Houston, Dave, and it's nighttime, and you've just played a show, and you've got to catch a flight and go to Chicago.
Yes.
Are you going to feel like playing two shows the next day as well?
No.
That is absolutely insane to me. Yeah. They played down in Comiskey Park.
At the two
shows. Ridiculous.
And even more, there's a quote here in Mark Lewison's book on the Beatles, Complete Beatles Chronicle. He says, the group arrived in Houston at 2 in the morning, and so then they were there that day and then split that night to go, to play two more shows to 25 and 37,000 people.
Ridiculous. So,
yeah.
Ticket prices for these, by the way.
Yeah, how much?
$550 mm-hmm. for a close-up, $450. $250.
Whoa. For the cheap seats. Wow.
And a promotion run by 7-Up. This information's from a great website, which I'm sure you've all been to, called The Beatles Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very good website. And they have a good chronicle of this, including a lot of those interviews, which we'd play. But, it's basically just imagine a reporter asking them a question and then they don't answer it.
Right.
just like a politician. But anyway, a promotion run by the drink 7-Up gave away 2,000 free tickets.
Oh, nice.
So you kind of got a free ticket to Comiskey Park to see the Beatles. That would be just by drinking a 7-Up.
Pretty awesome.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. So we've got this back-to-back Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday as well. So after the White Sox concert, then they flew up to Minnesota, or went up to the to Bloomington, Minnesota, which is now best known for where the Mall of America is.
In fact, the site that they played on is the Mall of America now.
Yeah.
Real interesting fact here. During the press conference that was held for this one, a couple of guys from a local store, B Sharp Music, presented George Harrison with a brand new Rickenbacker.
Yep.
Is that right, Dave?
Yep, that's right.
360-12, an electric 12-string guitar in fire glow red sunburst finish. He didn't play it, but when he got back to Britain, he used it for If I Needed Someone on Rubber Soul. So given to him free here at this Minneapolis concert.
Well, as you remember from our last episode on Paul McCartney's basses and how they just keep getting these free instruments, it just makes me sick. I wish someone would give me a 12-string Rick. Oh, sounds great.
Okay, so now, Dave, remember, imagine you've just played a concert.
Yeah, where's next?
In Minnesota. Okay. Now you've got to fly to Portland, Oregon. To play two shows at Memorial Coliseum.
Wow. These shows were on Sunday, August 22nd. So we've been playing two shows on Tuesday, one on Wednesday, two on Thursday, two on Friday, one on Saturday, and then two on Sunday before a total of 20,000 fans. And there were some celebrities at this particular show. You know who they were?
Oh, no.
Ah, well, they're the wonderful Beach Boys. Carl Wilson and Mike Love came to visit them in Portland.
Well, just a couple of years ago, the Beatles contract for this show was posted online. And there was a very interesting clause in it, and it revealed something that, you know, showed them to be very forward-thinking people. It said, artists will not be required to perform before a segregated audience.
Yeah.
So they insisted on the audience not being segregated. So it's pretty...
Yeah, because otherwise they wouldn't have played in Atlanta especially in the South. So that's... kudos to the Beatles on that. So then they had some time off and a couple days off here until Saturday the 28th. So they got almost a week off. And what did they do? They just sit by the beach in Oregon, or what did they do?
No. So on Tuesday, they're like, I got an idea. Let's go. We're in Los Angeles. We're renting Zsa Zsa Gabor's house. Let's have some people over, include Peter Fonda and the Byrds. And let's all do a bunch of LSD. Ringo's first time doing LSD.
Mm-hmm.
Paul didn't do it. And it was John and George's second time.
After the famous dentist episode.
Yeah. And there's a very long thing here from Roger McGuinn that has a very interesting little tidbit in it. He says... there were girls at the gates, police guards. We went in and David, John Lennon, George Harrison, and I took LSD to help get to know each other better. That's a great way to
That's a great way to put it.
There was a large bathroom in the house, and we were all sitting on the edge of a shower, passing around a guitar, taking turns to play our favorite songs. John and I agreed Bebop-a-Lula was our favorite 50s record.
Ooh, yeah.
I showed George Harrison some Ravi Shankar sounds, which I'd heard because we shared the same record company, on the guitar. I told him about Ravi Shankar, and he said he'd never heard Indian music before.
Oh.
So did this LSD trip on this very day change the course of George Harrison's life? I think so, maybe.
I think it might have, yeah. That's kind of interesting. I hadn't... thought of that before, but isn't there Indian music in Help in the movie?
That's why
the LSD might have
well he's reminiscing something from an LSD trip probably 40 years ago.
Yeah, that's true.
Said this, but wow. Ringo said a very short quote from Ringo: I'd take anything. So,
yeah, good way to do it. I don't know if that was that the
big article on that.
Pretty interesting. Was that the? I wonder if that was the same experience when they were with the Byrds. Maybe that was probably too early. But there was the famous one with Peter Fonda and John, where John kept saying, "I know what," or Peter Fonda kept saying, "I know what it's like to be dead."
Yes, that's mentioned in this article.
Okay, that was
too.
The same one then. Yeah,
And apparently people didn't like Peter Fonda very much. And then they also were playing Cat Ballou a lot, George Harrison says in the anthology about this. And they were playing Cat Ballou, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I hated that movie. And Lee Marvin, short little idiot and stuff like that. So,
wow.
So it was a weird day, weird night, yeah. But a lot of potentially hearsay.
Yeah.
But potentially a lot of things that might have affected them. But even if that's not the moment that he found out about Ravi Shankar, and that's not, it is definitely shows we're going from one era to another era.
Yeah, that's
we're
very
experimenting
true.
On drugs. We're meeting some other famous people.
Yes,
as they would 2 days later. have another like famous thing that they did.
Yes, they happened to go over to Elvis Presley's and with Colonel Tom Parker, and now stories vary again about what happened there. Whether at least what we know is that Elvis was supposedly sitting there playing a bass, and a Fender bass, and then they just were kind of talking, and Elvis was watching TV, and they were just, they wanted to talk about music, but Elvis wasn't really interested, and I don't know, they said they had a brief jam session with a poor quality tape that never really, it was rumored to exist, but never really materialized, but again, a pretty important experience, and Beatles and Elvis meeting each other for the first time. August 27th, 1965.
Yeah. So they hung out with Elvis, and then they were like, all right, we got to get back to work. To work, fellas. So they went to San Diego and played a show at Balboa Stadium. And then a couple big shows.
Yeah. Really some of the most famous shows in Beatle history. The two at the Hollywood Bowl in Los Angeles.
Now, you probably have heard the Hollywood Bowl. It was put out on record. Now they would edit up the heck out of that thing.
In the 70s, yeah.
Yeah, in the 1977, I believe it was released on record. So that's all edited up. I'm going to play a track, though, from the August 30th concert, because now you can just get the full concert on YouTube here, and let's hear a little bit of a good example of what Dave was talking about somewhat meandering introductions to songs. So let's hear a little bit of this intro, and he'll tell you what the song is.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
Thank you, John.
We'd like to do another film song now, but from a different film. Because we've made two.
He's that man on the
right. Go away with that light, will you? Oh, thank you. It's also our latest record over here. That means it's a new single. And it's a nice little ditty called Help.
Yeah, it's one of the tracks you can actually hear them over all the screams. So
tickets were $3, $4, $5, $6, or $7.
Hmm.
A whopping $7 to see the Beatles. I don't know.
Yeah.
They made $90,000 from the total take of the two concerts. So not a bad day's work.
No.
Couple days.
And if you want to go recreate that experience, I would highly recommend taking the Beatles Los Angeles tour given by a friend of the show, Jillian Lomax, who gives a Beatles tour of Los Angeles, and the last stop on the tour, you get to go to the Hollywood Bowl and see what it was like and recreate that experience. So it's pretty neat to be in that same spot where they played these historic shows. So that was then pretty much that was it, and we got one more. So where'd they conclude this thing, this tour?
Well, they did two shows at Cow Palace. I'm sure you've seen bootlegs here and there for various people from Cow Palace.
Grateful Dead and all sorts of groups. Yeah, The Doors.
Which is technically in Daly City.
Hmm.
So it's sort of a San Francisco area.
Mm-hmm.
Between the matinee and evening concerts, they had a press conference, and they were visited by none other than Johnny Cash, The Man in Black, and Joan Baez.
Well, that's a pretty good couple of weeks worth of experiences and shows, huh?
Meet Elvis, check. Play biggest concert ever, check.
Drop acid with members of the Birds.
Get Ringo to do LSD. one of the things about that LSD is they were like, yeah, it was a quote from George, and he was like, we couldn't relate with, after we'd done acid, we really couldn't relate with Paul and Ringo anymore, so we tried to get them to do it. And at least Ringo did it.
Yeah. Pretty incredible. I guess it really gives you a great appreciation for how hard the Beatles worked and the grueling travel schedule.
Just
which
unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays it's still, nobody likes to travel, and especially if you're doing a bus tour or something. But at that time, back in 1965, it wasn't nearly as easy as it is now. So it's pretty remarkable what they were able to do and remain, you know, sane for the most part after all that.
Yeah.
So, but as we kind of sum up here, I like your earlier statement. This is kind of the closure of the early Beatles, really. And we're moving into a completely different direction. Not only the LSD, but the Indian influences and things. Just a real sea change starts to happen after this tour. And so when they came back out for their final tour the next year, it just wasn't the same. Things had, too much had changed.
Yeah, and that'll be very evident in an upcoming episode very soon, where we will talk about Rubber Soul. And we're going to dive real deep into Rubber Soul.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, that pretty much changed everything, that record. And, yeah. You know, yeah, would they tour again? Yeah, but it would be a lot different. And,
yeah, it just didn't,
you know,
not that,
just didn't fit anymore after this. But this is sort of last gasp of all that Beatlemania stuff.
Yeah. Hopefully you've enjoyed this look at the Beatles live in 65, the American style. And, we've got a couple of upcoming shows, and there's some upcoming releases too that were, as we're recording today, it was just announced that the Beatles 1 video DVD/Blu-ray collection is going to be coming out, which is pretty
Beatles
exciting.
One Plus,
that's right. Yeah, the full title. Yeah.
So that's very exciting.
Yeah, coming out in November. And then, of course, we've got we've mentioned this before, but you're very excited for that Pipes of Peace Deluxe Edition coming out next month in October.
Oh, yeah. And the tug of War. I'm more excited for the Tug of War, obviously.
Yeah.
But also, I'm sure you've all rushed out and got the Hollywood Vampires album. Have you heard of this, Dave?
No, who's in that?
It's an album where Johnny Depp is on it.
Oh, okay.
The whole time, playing music.
Mm-hmm.
With famous celebrities like Alice Cooper, Joe Walsh, Joe Perry, and Paul McCartney. So there's a Paul McCartney track on this thing.
Okay, well, I'll be sure to get that one. Maybe we'll spin it when we get close to the holiday episode and take a listen.
Yeah, ooh, I would love that holiday episode.
Oh, yeah, I'm already getting my list together with all these reissues and re-releases here. So
that's right. It's going to be real great.
Yeah, so... All right, well, we'll close out today with a song from Shay. We started with one from Shay, and we'll close with probably the most famous one in the video, which is where, as you mentioned in the Beatles anthology, Ringo says John went mad playing the keyboard with his
playing
elbows.
Playing it with his elbow, yeah.
Yeah, so thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. We'll go out with I'm Down. You tell life because I can't see. You get back with your love and let me out now. When you know I'm down, how can you laugh? When you know I'm down, my dream woman goes to the way. Same old thing happen every day. I'm down, I'm really down. I'm down, down on the ground. I'm down, I'm really down. Oh, how can you laugh? When you know I'm down, how can you laugh? When you know I'm down. We'll be right back.
somebody else, you still mock him. And throw yourself on down.
Have me lay down.
Baby, I'm down.
Down on the ground.
I'm down.
I'm really down.
Well, how can you laugh when you know I'm down?
How can you laugh
when you know I'm down?